Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is a really special issue of You, the Owner's Manual. This is number 968B. And as always, both segments are brought to you by Persona Nutrition, personanutrition.com, where you can find out what you're missing in your nutrition and what to do about it, and they provide easy solutions. PersonaNutrition.com, thank them for bringing this to you. So after 960, you wouldn't think this would be anything special, but it is, because David Sinclair has written one of the most outstanding books I've ever read, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have to. It's been number one on Amazon. It's a wonderful, it's compelling rewritten, but it's a lot about science. And David Sinclair is an outstanding scientist, and I'd say that with or without his Harvard background. David, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks, Michael. I appreciate you having me on.
So let me go to the end, and then let's work backward, because I don't want to miss the prediction, if you will. How long do you think the average age will be, a lifespan will be in, let's say, 2030 and maybe 2050? Pick two times.
Yeah, well, this is where I get into trouble with my colleagues. But if we just extrapolate the way we've been headed over the last 100 years, even if we have no major breakthrough, children born today in the U.S. on average can expect to make it to 104, and that's average, so who knows what the outliers will be. And then with new work that I've put in the book, and Michael, you've read, we can actually reprogram the body to be younger, and if that works in our bodies, I think that would be an underestimate. I think that young people today could potentially make it another 10 or 20 years in good health, and maybe even further. We literally don't know how many times it's possible to reset the body or reset organs to be young again. So it's a super exciting time, and I think it may even end up being an underestimate if things go well.
And now there's a current decline because of what might be called overconsumption, lack of activity, too much food, stress that's we're not managing, whole bunch of other things, that at least for a group in society, and they're dragging down the average age, the average lifespan in the U.S. at least, and many other countries, from what I understand, it has decreased in the last 2 years. And the projection is that with type 2 diabetes and other things, it may continue that way. How do we get out of that rut, if you will, or will science take us out?
Yeah, you're right. So the U.S. is a bad example globally of healthcare and lifespan in general. There are countries such as Australia, Japan, that are continuing to head upward. The U.S. has stalled, possibly gone backwards. And you mentioned obesity, opioids. These are not helping at all. But what I'm seeing is that the population is bifurcating, that there are lots of people who, segments of the population that are not taking care of themselves, and those that are. And so there are going to be groups of people that, on average, live well into their 80s and beyond in a healthy way and leave the rest behind unless something's done.
And how do we do anything for the group? As you said, it's bifurcating. And is there any way, in other words, what I hear for people who have been on the bad side of the bifurcation, that is, who are obese or not doing physical activity, and at least when I've talked to a couple that have read your book, that I inspired to read it, they said, well, why should we do anything? Because we're going to be able to reboot ourselves.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to think about it. So here's the good news. The good news is that 80% of our lifespan is in our hands and how we live, and only 20% is genetic and what you got from your parents. And it's also never too late. We can switch the diet, we can switch out exercise, and we can recover a lot of bad living from our youth. And even if we take, so we do a fair amount of studies in my lab in trying to make mice live longer, but also we've done some human studies. And what we find is you can really have a big impact on things like blood sugar, inflammation, by doing the kind of things that you discuss, Michael, and I put in my book. And it's not an excuse to sit back and pop a pill, because what we find is, even though the pills that I discuss and some of them that I take myself can mimic aspects of diet and exercise, they're not replacements for it. And the good news, actually, is if you do both, at least in animal studies, we see a double benefit. And so if you really want to maximize your health, you should follow lifestyle and potentially take some of the molecules that we could possibly talk about today.
So one of the things, and we're talking to David Sinclair, who has written what I consider a spectacular book, a visionary book, a wonderful book called Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. David, part of the hypothesis in the book is that we age, and correct me if I'm not saying it well enough, that we age because not because our genes change, but because our epigenes, or our control of the genes, gets older. Is that a correct way of phrasing it?
It is. And what drove me to write the book was that I think we've made a breakthrough in understanding why we age. And you've hit it on the head, which is we used to think that our DNA was mutated. And if that's true, there's really not much you can do about aging. That's a one-way street. But if I'm right, and it's the control systems that turn genes on and off, that's reversible. And if there's a reset switch in the body, a backup hard drive of youth, then we can have a big impact. And that's what's so exciting about this new work.
And now the data for it, as you said, you've done this in a number of species, mice, and I guess some other species, maybe dogs, at least as I read through some of the references. When do you think we will get something of this translated to humans?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. So there are things that my family and I do now, and things that people who are listening can do now, that strongly indicate, it's not proof, but it really points in the direction of slowing down many aspects of aging. And then the drugs that are coming out of my lab are in clinical trials, so they're, you know, at best still a few years away. But the good news is we don't have to wait for those drugs to make it before we actually can do things to live much longer into our old age. And my father is a shining example of what might be possible, hopefully for everybody one day, who's entering his 80s now. He's 80. Started a new career and is feeling much better than he did even 10 years ago. And you'd never know. We cannot know if the reason is because he's following the kind of things that I talk about doing in my book. But if nothing more, it's a showcase, a beacon of hope for the rest of us of what's possible.
So some of the things that he's doing, as I read it, are he's being physically active. He has a purpose in life. He's got intent, intellectual stimulation, and family, and seems to be eating pretty well. Are those the keys, and what else would you add to that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if our listeners are to look at the list of things that he and I do, I think it's on page 302 of the book. You can jump to those pages. But if there are just a few things that I can mention, the things that I think are helping the most are that he's been active. He has been exercising since he was late 30s, 40s. But that's not enough, right? We know people who do that and they still become frail at 80. What he's been doing is keeping a healthy body weight, not becoming, I mean, he's never been super thin, but he hasn't been what you'd call obese in his life. He did have high blood sugar, so he also went on metformin and he started eating less often. And the combination of those things, I think, has been the main help. And let me just dive into one of those things I said, which is eating less often. I think that that's a really important change in our lives, and I think one that I'd be happy to recommend, which is, the old idea of 3 square meals a day plus snacks, don't be hungry. I don't agree with that. I've seen enough research in people and in animal studies that just as important as what we eat is when we eat. And so what I do and my father does is we skip at least one meal a day, and sometimes two if we're busy. And that turns on longevity genes, which we've discovered in my lab and many others. We think that's how this all works.
More of You, the Owner's Manual, coming right up. But let's take a moment to talk about your health. Dr. Roizen will tell you that a common question he gets asked often is what vitamins he likes, what he recommends. Without knowing more about their needs, that question used to be almost impossible to answer. Now, however, it's easy. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and take your free assessment. It's a smart and easy way to get personalized supplement recommendations. The Persona Assessment is backed by the latest nutritional research and the expertise of Persona's Medical Advisory Board, which consists of 8 nutritionists, a pharmacist, and 5 medical doctors, including Dr. Michael Roizen. All the latest scientific data and nutritional research put into one supplement program personalized for you. Just take the 5-minute assessment to get your free recommendations based on your goals, lifestyle, allergies, special diets, and prescription meds. Convenient vitamin packs are delivered to your door each month. Whether you want to sleep better, have more energy, or simply stay as young as you can, go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and get 50% off your order today. Half off now at personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
So talk to us about the longevity genes, and then, if you would, some of the molecules. And you mentioned metformin, but you've also, in the book, talk about NAD, and we ought to get into that and maybe rapamycin or the rapalogs a little bit, too, if you could. But talk about the longevity genes. Where are they located?
Well, every cell has longevity genes in them. In fact, every animal and plant has longevity genes. We've known this for now 25, 30 years. But what happens as we get older is they become less active. And the proteins that they make, these enzymes, they don't protect us anymore. And there are 3 main classes of them. I'll just rattle off names. One is the sirtuins. We work on those. There's 7 of those in every cell in our body. There's what's called AMP kinase. Don't have to remember that, but that's how we think metformin is helping the body. And then there's a 3rd one called mTOR, and you mentioned rapamycin. That's a drug that was found to suppress the immune system, but that works through this mTOR genetic pathway. And those 3 main systems are always talking to each other. They're sensing whether we're exercising, how much meat we're eating, how many amino acids, and also other things like how much energy we have. Let me get back to the NAD thing, because you mentioned, Michael, NAD. So these sirtuins that we work on, these are protectors of the body. They fix things. They fix proteins. They fix DNA. They dampen inflammation. Many, many dozens of things scientists have discovered that they do, and there are 7 of them, so they do different things in different parts of the body. But the problem is that they need fuel, and that fuel is called NAD, which is short for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. And NAD levels in many parts of our body we see goes down as we get older, and especially the levels of NAD go down if you're sedentary and you're overweight and you don't exercise and you eat a lot. And so we think that the main benefits of being hungry, eating a good diet, and exercise work by activating these sirtuin defenses. And one of the ways that we could boost all of their activity is to replenish the NAD levels in the body when we get older. And when we do that in our lab, we have a lot of mice in my lab that we try to make fitter and healthier. We gave them some of the NAD boosting molecules that we've discovered, and we put it in their water supply. And just 4 weeks later, the mice that were drinking this molecule, or just a little bit of the molecule in their water, could run 50% further without getting tired, as though they'd been exercising, but they hadn't really. And so that's good news, because a lot of people cannot exercise or don't have the time or the energy. And the other good thing is that we can add to exercise as well. So the mice that got the molecule and exercised, they actually ran twice as far, even further. Some mice ran so far they broke the machine, it stopped running, which we call the great mouse treadmill experiment. But that's all good news, right, that we can have these NAD-boosting molecules or metformin, and they can give us that extra boost, we think, and protect us against the diseases of aging.
Now, let's go in and just so exercise. So it isn't just that they're replacing exercise. In other words, they get an extra benefit in addition to exercise.
The mice do, and we think the same is going to be true for us. And we're testing that right now here at Harvard in human studies. So I can't say for sure it's going to work, but I can tell you that it's certainly not hurting my family to be boosting our NAD level so far.
Now, that's the next part of it. Do we know of any downside to NAD? In other words, there's some downside that you can at least postulate for rapamycin or metformin. Do we know of any downside for NAD?
Well, not yet, but we haven't put it into a million people like these other molecules have been. So there's the risk that there's something we don't know. But from what I know, there isn't a risk. Otherwise, I wouldn't take it, and my father wouldn't either. He's a scientist. But that doesn't mean it's perfectly safe. And, you know, with an abundance of caution, you have to be aware that it's still experimental. Even though it's a natural molecule that we take one called NMN, we don't know for sure what the long-term effects are, but so far so good. I've been taking NMN for a few years now, my father as well. And but what's the potential downside? I think it's worth talking about that. We find that it grows new blood vessels in the muscle, just like exercise would, and you get better blood flow. You wouldn't want that if you have cancer. So I would think it would be risky if you already are diagnosed with cancer to take it. But other than that, we haven't seen any downside. Oh, I will say, because it's a very educated audience you have here, we have tested NAD boosters in mice that have cancer, and we haven't seen any adverse effects. If anything, we've seen that it helps reduce the size of the cancer. But I think it's very important that everybody knows what the risks are. Oh, one last thing. In terms of conflict of interest, I don't sell anything. I'm not peddling any supplements. I stay well away from those things. But I will say that I have invested in a couple of companies that are working on NAD boosters to treat diseases such as Friedreich's ataxia and infertility.
And those studies, at least with Friedreich's ataxia, at least as I have read the published part of it, seem very promising.
Well, yeah, you can model the disease in mice for what that's worth, and it seems to help a lot in those mice who have the human Friedreich's ataxia gene. They have low NAD levels, so we boost that back up, and they do well, and it's been done in a few labs now. So that's promising, but mice are not humans and vice versa. So we'll have to see. We're hoping to start our first study down in Philadelphia starting next year. So far, the safety studies, phase one studies, have been very positive, nothing negative so far.
And metformin, which we think works, or at least in the book, you think it works through AMP kinase, and the downside of that, it might be too low a blood sugar if you had it at the wrong time. But again, that doesn't seem to be a problem. Is that correct?
You don't want to be really low on blood sugar. You don't want to be dizzy and you can't concentrate. So I'm a PhD, right? So, Michael, you have to make sure I say everything correctly. a lot of people take metformin in the millions. It's the first line of defense for type 2 diabetes. And I think it's about 40% of people have stomach upset. And there are ways to get around that. We've always taken it with food, which seems to help. And sometimes you can escalate the dose to get used to it. But there are still some people who can't tolerate metformin, even with a coated capsule. And so that's the biggest downside. There are some very rare side effects, such as lactic acidosis. So you want to be doing this under doctor's supervision or at least doctor's advocacy, and you will require a prescription to get it.
And the other one is there's a rapamycin in a much lower dose than is used to suppress the immune system. Seems also to have benefits with minimal risk in the dose that it's been given to humans, as I understand.
That's what I understand, too. I haven't done a lot of work on that, and I haven't experimented myself with my family, mainly because the high doses have some immunosuppressing activity. And but there have been some human studies that showed in elderly people with some low-dose rapamycin, I think it was 2 milligrams or 3 milligrams, it's a lot less than the regular dose for immunosuppressants.
Yes, Dr. Green, who we've had on once in the past, I think was using 3 or 6 milligrams, didn't have good data on a difference, but was using it once a week, if you will. So almost as a stress dose to, I guess you'd say, maybe it activates something in a stressful way that causes repair.
Right. Well, what it'll do, we know very accurately what it does in the body. It will inhibit a group of proteins that come together, and they're called TOR, or mTOR, standing for mammalian TOR. And long story short, the TOR proteins have evolved, or at least exist, to serve to sense how much protein and the byproducts of protein, amino acids, have been ingested. And when you don't have a lot of amino acids, mTOR will go down in its activity, and it'll start recycling proteins in your own body. And that seems to be part of the way it extends the lifespan of mice and perhaps provides health benefits in the elderly by recycling old protein, which can accumulate. It's similar to mimicking a very low protein diet, which has been actually shown to have some really great health benefits, both in animals and in humans.
That's the Walter Longo fasting mimicking diet with a very low protein. So, Dr. Sinclair, if the interesting thing is, I don't know if Mass General or the BI or the Brigham have a executive health program. They didn't when I was there in the olden days, but maybe they do. When do you expect that we will see what I would call age reduction clinics or age reduction offices as part of those programs start? And when do you think, if you were going to say, when do you think something like this will be far enough along that this will be talked about as though it is a routine?
Well, I'm already seeing legitimate clinics, I wouldn't call it popping up, but I'm seeing more and more of them with reputable doctors who read the science. And I think it's going to continue. Anyone who hasn't heard any of this science before might be skeptical that we've heard this all before and how do we know who to trust. But what is really important to know, and from my book, listeners will know, that the science has gone ahead in leaps and bounds, and we know so much more about why we age and how we can slow it down. And it's going very fast. And so it's a challenge for doctors to stay on top of all of the science and literature. But there are some that are specialized in this area, and they're doing legitimate things that may actually allow people to live a lot longer and certainly a lot healthier in their older age.
We should
mention
the book.
I don't know how long it's going to take.
We, we should mention the book title again, because it is really a spectacular book. If you haven't read it, you should, and maybe buy two or three copies for your friends, too. It's called Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To, by David A. Sinclair. David, go ahead, and I interrupted what you were doing on a prediction, if you will.
Oh, sure. Well, what I think is going to happen is that there'll be more and more doctors who feel quite comfortable prescribing medicines like metformin before diabetes comes around, and I'm seeing more and more of that. This is apocryphal, but what I hear is the sales of metformin are going up dramatically as patients are asking their doctor to prescribe them metformin before they have any disease as more of a preventative measure. So I think that the future looks promising, and probably within the next 10 years it will be quite socially acceptable to go and visit a doctor who knows how to prescribe you medicine to slow your aging. Right now, there's very few doctors, and I'm asked every day, who can people go and see? And there aren't that many.
So we do try and keep up on this, and we do try and keep our audience up on the latest developments. This is a book that will help you and is written beautifully. I've got to tell you, it almost is compelling reading. There's a little too much science in it to make it as good as a romance novel, but it is almost that. It's a spectacular book, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. Dr. Sinclair, thank you for doing what you've done. I only hope we can keep doing more of it. Let me ask you one last question, if I can, because one of the scientists that I know proposed seeing if he could switch from, that is, use some, if you will, epigenetic technique to transfer white fat into brown fat. Do you think that is a potential? And has your lab been involved in that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that the labs you're probably talking about, and I think it's really interesting. We haven't done that yet. We have studied the genes that are involved in it. The sirtuin family of genes helps make brown fat. Turns out it's harder to make brown fat the older you get. What I do, by the way, is that I go from a sauna into a cold bath every weekend about half an hour back and forth. It's fairly painful, right? I don't think anyone would enjoy jumping in a cold bath. But that's supposed to stimulate brown fat across the back and where it's formed. I think it's got a lot of promise, actually. Brown fat's very healthy. It secretes chemicals or proteins that signal youth, and it's also good for revving up metabolism and boosting the numbers of those mitochondria. So I think the science is good. Epigenetic reprogramming of brown fat, I think that would be great. Certainly would be a lot more pleasant than jumping in cold pools every weekend.
Well, thank you again. And I'm going to say thank you for all of society for writing this book. It's a tremendous book. The interesting thing is it has some of the same information as the book that I'm in the midst of writing, which is The Real Age, which I would call it is how to, the subtitle of the book is How to Prepare to Make Your Real Age Half Your Calendar Age. I think this is superb, and I can't tell you how honored we are to have you working on this and this area, as well as to come on the show. So thank you very much. And again, for people who are listening, this is podcast number 968B of You, the Owner's Manual. And thanks very much. Thank Randall and Justin for engineering. and you, Dr. Sinclair, for doing it, but especially our listeners, 51,000 or so who you download this every week, can't all be wrong, so thank you very much. Do tell your friends about us.